From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Gemma Caudette. You're listening to Idaho Matters. Lori Vallow Daybell was found guilty on all charges after her murder trial wrapped up earlier this month. The jury found her guilty of murdering two of her children, 7-year-old Joshua J.J. Vallow and 16-year-old Tylee Ryan. And now one of those jurors in the case, juror number 8, has come forward to talk about sitting in that courtroom with Daybell for 5 weeks. The juror saw directly across from Daybell and said, quote, "If there is a face to evil, it was hers," end quote. Joining us today to talk more about this is Nate Eaton, news director at EastIdahoNews.com. Nate is the one who sat down with juror number 8. And Nate, we want to thank you for coming on the program today to talk more about this.
Oh, thank you for having me.
So, Nate, how did you catch up with juror number 8?
He actually reached out to me, which was interesting. The court said to, right before the verdict came down, I asked the court if I could give a letter to each juror and express my interest in interviewing them. And they said, what we can do is interested media can send an email, and then they will pass those emails along to all the jurors at the end of the trial and say, if you're interested, here are the reporters who are willing to speak to you. And from what I understand, out of the 18 jurors and alternate jurors, 3 expressed interest in possibly doing some media. And Saul was one of them. He reached out to me on the Sunday following the trial. And then I contacted him. We texted back and forth. And then I drove out to his home in Boise on Tuesday and we sat down.
So who is he, Nate? I mean, what did you find out about Saul?
He works in the business sector in Boise. He didn't, he asked us to keep his employment private, but he's mm-hmm. a successful businessman. The court system to him matters a lot because he was raised in Mexico, he said, where the legal system is quite different than here. And, he emigrated into, America. He grew up in Burley and then he moved to Boise and began his business career. I had dinner with him and his wife and his son the night before the interview, and a fascinating story of who this man is. He's actually served on 3 juries. This is his 3rd one.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. And he since 2014, so recent. And he said that he thought for sure that he would not be picked for this trial because mm-hmm. he had done previous service, but he made it through and he gave up 6 weeks of his life to be in there.
So Nate, when he said that, I mean, I can only imagine, right, that here is someone who's like, okay, I'm willing to sit on a jury. I've done it before. However, I could also be having to give up, 6 weeks of my life in a lot of ways. Was that a difficult decision for him?
It was not convenient, but he was not going to push against it. He probably could have gotten out of jury service by saying, I've done 2 juries in the past 8 years and I'm really busy at work. He's in the middle of moving, him and his wife. They just sold their home. Wow. When I went over to their house, it was empty because they're in between houses. His wife is just finishing up her degree. So they're quite busy. He probably could have gotten out of it. But to him, he said he sees it as an honor as a citizen and something mm-hmm. that he should do. His work was understanding with him during the breaks and after the trial days, or around 4 in the afternoon, he would work on his career stuff, stuff for his job. But mm-hmm. he looked at this like it was a responsibility, and he went in there very matter of fact. He tried not to let emotion persuade him, just stick to the facts. And mm-hmm. and even as a jury pool, it sounds like when they got together at the end to deliberate, they very much stuck to the facts, according to him. They kind of threw out the emotional testimony and they just went through the evidence just to see if the case had been proven, and took it very analytically, specifically to what the judge told them, rather than letting their emotions take charge.
Well, that's actually what you want a jury to do,
sure.
ultimately.
Yep.
With that said, Nate, he talked with you quite a lot about the religious components of this case. So tell us what you found out from Saul about that aspect of the case.
Well, this was one of those things. The prosecution said several times that no one is being prosecuted because of their religion. They're being prosecuted because of what they did with their religious beliefs. Mm. And the focus of the trial seemed to be more on the power that Lori and Chad seemed to get from believing that they were gods and goddesses, from their religious beliefs. And that, you know, that was discussed. I think what played a bigger fact to him, at least, and really the jury in general, I think, was the final witness, FBI agent Doug Hart, who went through Lori's iCloud. And that was a day, that was a full day of testimony. And they, Sorry, we're monitoring the other big story of the day.
No, I know you've got to, you're monitoring the other big story that's going on, which is the Brian Koberger case, but we're focusing on this today, but there's a lot going on, Nate.
There is. Yes. My apologies. So anyway, that agent is went up and really kind of threw out the religious talk and just laid out the facts where cell phones pinged, which text messages were sent. He said that really made a big impact to him as far as bringing the case all together and simply saying, okay, no matter what they believed religiously, no matter where they were in the mental state, these are the things that actually occurred and there's evidence of those things.
So, Nate, was he surprised when the defense, arguably could say they did not put up much of a case? I mean, their argument was prosecutors didn't prove the case, so, you know, we're resting.
Oh, yes, very much so. He wanted to hear from them. He kept hoping. He said, I went in there with the belief that Lori was innocent, that she was not guilty. And sure, the prosecution took 5 weeks to present all their evidence and witnesses. And we were waiting to hear what the defense said, who they were going to call. He was stunned. And I would even dare say disappointed that there wasn't something. We all want to know the reason why, even if it's not a good reason, we want to know something, but there was nothing. And it really didn't give them much to go on, obviously, because there wasn't anything in there. Now, there was cross-examination that they were able to point out and some questions that the defense did raise throughout the prosecution's case. But he said that was a big disappointment. And they also wanted to hear from Lori. They wanted Lori Vallow to take the stand and be asked questions and answer whatever she could. But that, of course, didn't happen either.
Mm-hmm. I know that Saul, along, I'm sure, with other jurors, took copious amounts of notes during the trial, Nate. What does he do with those notes and how did they help him during the trial?
He took a lot of notes. And I even noticed that before I met him, I noticed he was one of the jurors that took lots of notes. They cannot keep those. In fact, at the end of the day, they had to leave them at the courthouse. And at the end of the trial, they were turned in. So nothing was able to go with them. As fascinating as it would be to read through those notes now and get his thoughts. He did say that as time went on, less and less notes were taken because I don't think he really felt the need. And there was some testimony that he felt was repetitive and they had heard before. But yeah, all of those notes stay there. And there are some jurors, he said, who plan to get together, maybe have a barbecue or something. For him, he looked at this more as, I got to get in and do my job. I'm not there to make friends. I'm not there to, you know, become buddy buddy. I'm just there to do my job. And when the verdict came in, it was read. He saw Lori. It was emotional. He left and he went golfing. I mean, he hadn't golfed for 6 weeks. And then he was back at work on Monday. That happened on a Friday. He was back at work Monday, talking to me on Tuesday. So he very much just looked at this as his civic duty, part of his job. Had to get it done. And I think those are the type of jurors that defense attorneys and prosecutors want. Like you said, they don't want the ones that get caught up in emotion, the ones that are easily persuaded based off of emotional witnesses. They want those that stick to the facts. And that's what this guy did.
Mm-hmm. And I know, Nate, when you sat down with him, I know Saul mentioned that he really related to Lori's children, JJ and Tylee. Is that because he does have children who are similar in age? And I thought about that a lot as a parent, because I have a child who is the same age as JJ. I mean, if JJ were alive, I mean, I literally have a child the same age. And that just resonated with me.
Yeah, his kids, he realized, I think the first or second day of the trial, that the age gap between his two sons are the same as JJ and Tylee. So he could relate to their differences in age and how his eldest son is like a dad in a way to his old, to his younger son. They're a few years apart. He also had an interesting take on one thing that stuck out to him is the manipulation that he said he saw between Chad and Lori back and forth. He compared, he thinks that the relationship, Chad was in the driver's seat in the beginning, driving the car, making the decisions. And that as time went on, they kind of switched roles. Lori went into the driver's seat. And he said the proof of that was there was these text messages that were shared in court. The first time Chad and Lori had an argument, Lori was ignoring Chad and Chad desperately wanted to hear from her. It was like teenagers who get the silent treatment. And he was saying, please just respond with a thumbs up emoji or you'll lose all your powers. And she writes something back and he says, oh, great, I can get your power restored. This is all happening when his wife is still alive, by the way. So he related that to, you know, the life that he's seen of his kids who teenage years and other teenagers where these are full grown adults, yet they're acting like teenagers, at least during this particular circumstance.
Nate, I only have about a minute left, but very quickly, what did he tell you about Lori Daybell?
He said that he had never seen evil until this. And it was fascinating to hear him say that. He saved that for the end of the interview. He had said that the night before, but he said she is the face of evil and that he came to that conclusion by the end of the trial. He did not think that in the beginning. Some people said they see her and might have a feeling, you know, they just feel dark or whatever. That wasn't necessarily him, but by the end, once he had seen all the evidence and the photos, he said, this woman is evil. And he believes Chad to be the same. And he is anxious to see what happens with Chad's trial. But he says that he has seen evil and he witnessed it in that courthouse for 6 weeks. And he's glad that it's over.
Well, Nate, as always, thank you for your reporting on this, for bringing, frankly, this entire case to light for everyone. And hopefully all of these jurors can take some time, decompress, be able to move on. So really appreciate your time with us.
Thank you.
We've been talking with Nate Eaton. He is the news director at EastIdahoNews.com about interviewing one of the jurors in Lori Vallow Daybell murder trial. We will put a link to Nate's entire interview with juror number 8 on our website, BoiseStatePublicRadio.org. Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
Two men of color vanished after last being seen in the same deputy's patrol car.
I knew something was wrong. The mother knows.
It's the strangest case, the most unsettling case.
Listen to The Last Ride podcast, part of the NPR Network.